So if you're trying to buy real estate and you're an employee, you're trying to buy it with after-tax dollars. That means you'll have to work 4, 5, 6 times harder than I will to make that same down payment. And on top of it, you're paying more in taxes. You don't get that advantage. So the best reason I get excited about this tape for is the reason I form businesses is more than just the money I make or the value of the company. Its real value to me is the assets it buys from me. So that's why when I meet somebody in the E quadrant and they say to me, you know, I'm looking for a safe, secure job, will you pay me $40,000 a year? I'll gladly give them money because what that person is building for me is an asset. So rule number one of my rich dad was the rich don't work for money. So an employee works for money. And I'm really happy to pay the employee the money because what the employee is helping me build is the asset. So not only does the business go up in value, but the assets that building that business is buying me, often my paper assets as well as my real estate, is far more valuable than the money I'm paying. So the leverage I am getting on paying somebody $50,000, $100,000 a year is not in the money I'm paying them, it's the asset they're building for me. So a lot of times the poor middle class feel, you know, they're not getting ahead. The reason is they're working for money and not building assets. And people in the S quadrant, they're building practices and they're not building an asset. And so that's why really take a look at stop working for money, start building a business so you build your business can invest in your assets for you. As I said, real estate is oftentimes a capital intensive acquisition. And unless you have a very profitable business with minimum taxes, it's really hard to get in the game and get ahead in the game.
That's very well said. And I like the point too about the reinvesting. I mean, let's run this scenario a little bit. If the corporation gets involved in some of these properties and then their value appreciates, well, through a Section 1031 exchange, which means it's a tax-deferred exchange, you can sell that, take the appreciation, and buy bigger and better properties that necessarily aren't better now, they're priced below market, that you can make better. So you can grow this estate and leverage, all because you hired somebody at the right time to take you out of the loop and build your business.
Right. So what Diana's talking about is 1031 exchange. I learned that from Monopoly. Remember Monopoly, you bought 4 greenhouses, and then you sell all the 4 greenhouses, and you buy this red house. Well, the beauty about real estate, in America especially, is I can, let's say those 4 greenhouses cost me $100,000, and I sell them 10 years later for $1 million. Well, that $900,000 gain is tax deferred. With that $900,000 or the new million I have, I can go buy a $10 million building. And if that building goes up, let's say 20%, that gain again is given back to me tax deferred. It means I don't have to pay gains on that tax. I can use all that money gained to go buy more property instead of paying it in taxes, which most people do if they have paper assets. In other words, if you have a stock and it goes from $10 to $100 and you sell it, you have to pay gains on that $90. Whereas in real estate, if it goes from $10 to the $100, I don't pay tax on the $90. That's another advantage that real estate has. But real estate has one more very big advantage, and that's the idea of good losses versus bad losses. So Diane, being the accountant, what's the difference between a good loss and a bad loss that real estate offers?
I'm glad you asked me that question. In real estate, there's a deduction called depreciation. There's an assumption in the tax code that a building is worth less every year. In reality, that's seldom the case. Most buildings appreciate. But because the government gives us this deduction, and by the way, this is true in every country I've ever read the code in, everybody has depreciation. That means you're just arbitrarily given an amount you get to write off. That amount gets to be deducted on your tax return.
From your income.
From your income, and there is no actual hard dollar spent.
What she means by that is this, is that you're actually making money. You're actually putting money in your pocket, but the government is saying, but you're getting these fake losses or paper losses. So you're getting money, plus you're getting paper losses. One of the problems I have with mutual funds is you may not make any money, but the mutual fund will pass on its gains to you. In other words, you will pay taxes upon income you never made with a mutual fund. And with real estate, you'll get a tax deduction based upon income you actually did make. So it's completely reversed. That's one difference. You must know the difference between paper assets and real estate assets.
That's a great distinction. And what we're talking about now is the difference between real losses and paper losses. Depreciation is clearly a paper loss. Another example of this, although it's not true for the real estate, Another example is the large pickup truck that Robert bought. Because it fit into a certain area in the tax code, he was able to take a deduction of $18,500. That's as if he'd spent that much money. But he didn't have to spend that much money.
I got the truck on a zero down.
So he got a loss, an expense, for something he didn't spend money for. That's the best kind of deduction you can get.
So all those deductions are available to somebody who's making a lot of money, which is why the rich get richer, and people who reinvest rather than buy liabilities with their income.
Now let's talk about what a bad loss would be. And whenever I do seminars, I can guarantee somebody in the audience is going to ask me if it makes sense for them to invest in something that they know they're going to lose money in for the write-offs. And in other words, they're going to spend $10,000 to get $5,000 in a write-off. To me, that's totally crazy. Instead of losing $10,000, they end up losing $5,000, the difference between the two numbers. Why would you do that? And so I absolutely do not recommend anyone get involved in any deal that creates a loss.
That's because it's a sham transaction at that point. In other words, you get into a deal for the tax write-off rather than for the making of money. In America, we used to have a thing called negative cash flow, and Australia is called negative gearing. And the people who lost the most money in America were the people who bought these negatively geared or negative cash flow investments for the tax loss. In other words, they bought it to lose money. What Diane and I are saying is this: there's so many deals out there that you can buy, get passive losses from, and still make money. So why would you settle for a deal that loses you money to lose more money? It doesn't make any sense. And for me personally, there's something ethically and morally wrong with that, although many people say, well, it's the only way we can make money. Well, if you say it's the only way you can make money, then I guess that's what you're limited to, but limited thoughts create limited results out there. What I'm saying out there is I go into a project, an investment, a business, any kind of venture, solely for the purpose of making money first and then being cognizant and aware of the tax implications thereafter. But I would never buy something simply because I get a tax write-off for it.
Exactly. And when we talked about the vehicles, you're teasing Robert a little bit on tape three. Those are expenses he would normally have. Personally, I keep a car for a number of years. Even though I know that I could get the write-off, I've had my same car for over a year.
So the point we're getting at here is this. We're all familiar with the story of the goose that laid the golden egg. Well, the reason you build a business is because you're building the goose. And what the goose does, it lays these golden eggs. And your job is to let those eggs hatch so it produces more geese. Instead, what people do is they go out and buy the big mansion, the jets, the safari, the young girlfriend or boyfriend, or the kids in private school, and they get desperate for those golden eggs because they're cracking them open and eating them so fast. And as the story of the parable goes, the person eventually kills the goose looking for more golden eggs faster. And that's what happens to people who mismanage their money. In other words, they have the cash flow pattern of actually the middle class, which is to get further and further in debt no matter how much money they make. So the real way to do it is you build a business, you reinvest in it so it keeps growing. And with the eggs that come off that business, because you've reinvested that money in it, you reinvest the eggs also in paper assets as well as real estate. And if you'll consistently do that, you will get richer and richer and richer, paying the least amount of taxes, which means you get ahead the fastest.
That's great. So those ways, again, in summary, are as the business starts having cash flow, reinvest it back in the business. Make it the best you possibly can to create a little money machine for yourself. Invest in paper assets. Do it the right way, though. Do it through life insurance. Get the right financial planning involved, the people that deal with these kinds of high-end issues. And thirdly, invest in real estate. Things that might be rental, might be for your business. There's numbers of possibilities. But the key is the business is investing at a much lower tax rate and much less tax cost. So you're able to then further leverage that business.
Which comes up in the summary of this whole thing, what separates the rich from everybody else. A friend of mine is an attorney, and Diane and I talked about this on a tape we did called My Rich Dad Taught Me About Investing. He's an attorney who handles divorces of high-end or rich couples. And being about age 30-something and just having a young child, he became concerned about investing for his future and for his wife and daughter. And he went to a financial planner, and the financial planner advised him to diversify by mutual funds and buy some term life insurance. and being very upset with that, he came to see me. And the reason he came to see me was because when he divorces a very wealthy couple, which I'm not recommending, we're not endorsing that, but when he opens up the portfolio of the very rich, he doesn't find in there mutual funds that are diversified with term life insurance. And I said, well, what do you find in there? And what he said to me, what I find in there, in their portfolio, are businesses and real estate primarily. And I said, that's what makes the rich rich. It's businesses and real estate and reinvesting your assets in the best advice and keep your asset column growing as quickly as possible, paying the minimum of taxes. But the most important thing is you must plan to be rich and keep reinvesting to get there.
That's great. Well said. And then as a final wrap-up, as the wealth grows, there's a couple of other ways that a business can invest. One is that a business invests in community. And we frequently see that. The greatest philanthropists are the wealthiest people, the Carnegies, Mellon, all of the foundations that are formed, Rockefeller. The wealthy are really what have driven a lot of the cultural advances and social advances we see in our countries. There's no reason you can't have that as a goal. If that's something you want to create, let your business create that for you. And by the way, it's a tax deduction. So there's always benefits for both you and the community as you do these things.
Right, and that's called philanthropy, and that's probably within the last 25% of your life you start doing that, unless, of course, you're Bill Gates. I just read that Bill Gates' foundation is having a very big problem, which is his philanthropic foundation. He has four of them. One's dedicated to learning, and one's just dedicated to giving back, as you said. That company, that trust, has to give back $325 billion a year at 1999 rates. They're having a problem giving that much money back. And this goes back again to my story of rich dad, poor dad. My rich dad was a capitalist, and my poor dad was a socialist, a school teacher. And he saw the rich only from the point of view that they were greedy and only did it for themselves. And he never saw the good that the rich did. My rich dad, in the later years of his life, although he was rich, he became enriched because he gave it back. He gave it back to his churches, his society, he gave it back in scholarships. And he was actually the happiest in the later years of his life because his life was enriched, setting up these foundations to give the money back. My poor dad, the PhD, the school teacher, the socialist, all he saw was the rich were greedy, nasty, and all this. And I hate to say this, but he died, much like Karl Marx did, a very angry, bitter, poor man, never seeing the good that having money could do.
Thanks for saying that. The change that can happen as the businesses grow and that help the community, and additionally foundations run by people who are successful businessmen seem to run a whole lot better than ones that are ran by social workers who really don't know how to run a business.
Or out with a cause to save somebody rather than enrich people.
Exactly. And then finally, a business can invest in your family through the gift, through the setting up of trusts and business continuation planning. And again, these are things that generally happen in the last 25% of somebody's life. But a business can be a legacy when it's built right. A job is just a job until you retire and you get a gold watch.
Right. You're helping somebody else build their asset instead of your assets. And I think that's one of the reasons my rich dad always said to me, he says, mind your own business and all your dreams will come true. And I think that's what we're seeing in this tape also.
So in final summary, there's many options available as the cash flow starts coming in your business. You first reinvest in the business to make sure the machine's running as well as it can. The business can invest in real estate. The business invests in stocks and paper assets, doing it through the proper vehicles. The business can invest in the community through philanthropy foundations. And the business can invest in family. We started with the story of Jackie, who was a secretary making less than $25,000 a year with two children. And we left her in tape three with her two businesses going, and that's where she is today. But I know that those businesses will continue to grow, and someday she'll be dealing with these issues too.
She'll be dealing with an issue that very few people deal with, the problem of having too much money and what to do with that. So it is possible, in my experience, I've come from the same setbacks and the same things that many people have faced or maybe facing today. The only thing that determines whether you make it or not is you. And ultimately, I think the only person that you can talk to about this issue is yourself, your friends and family around you. Will they support you in setting up a life of tremendous abundance? Or
yeah, you've had to examine where you are, and you did it with honesty. You looked at your expenses. You had to think about ways to create a business. And we hope with this final tape we give you the dreams and the goals that are possible. Those things are possible. You've already done some of the hardest steps because those are what happened inside you. Thank you for listening.